This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Companies that specialize in deploying digital signage networks don't always get the kind of respect they deserve in this industry. They can get called hanging man guys, when in reality the job is complicated as hell. Getting digital signage networks properly installed and running across hundreds or even thousands of locations involves a lot of project management and coordination, and a lot of vetting and training to ensure the techs who show up know the work, what to do, and how to behave. Travis Peterson started Snap Install about 10 years ago, having learned his installation chops working in home AV systems. Those can be fun jobs, putting slick audio and video systems in the homes of stinking rich people. But to scale an installation business, you need high volume commercial work. Digital signage delivers that. Based in Minneapolis, Snap Install now has a big core staff and hundreds of trusted contractors around the US and Canada who take on high volume digital signage deployments in venues like restaurants, retail, and healthcare. We had a great chat about the challenges he faces and the bigger ones presented in the past year. We also get into where Snap starts and stops and why his team does the stuff they're good at and leaves things they probably could do to their partners. Travis, thanks for joining me. Can you tell me, because maybe not everybody knows what Snap Install is all about?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. Snap Install, we're a nationwide service provider. We're located out of Maple Grove, Minnesota. For those of you not familiar with Minnesota, it's right in the Twin Cities area. And we are a nationwide service provider of skilled labor. So in other words, we're a broker of services. We have 54 employees at our corporate office and then 700 plus contractors across the country that work for us directly. Businesses and manufacturers hire Snap to provide installation service solutions really from coast to coast. So our job is to ensure we represent our clients in a professional manner and follow up the design scope of work to get the job done. Now that job could be a 1,000+ site rollout across the country or one service call in a rural area.
Are you focused just on digital signage or is it one of many things that you do?
It's digital signage is the primary focus and represents a majority of our business, but we also have two other verticals that are defined. One is the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. And then another one is the relocation of executives across the country. So they're residential homes, actually.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what do you do with that?
So it's actually one of the main reasons the company got started. I was fresh out of college. My second job, I was working for a company back just over 10 years ago. And that company was similar business model, but it was B2C compared to our business model being B2B. And back mm-hmm. then you go to Amazon, you throw a TV in your cart and you could have added installation. That company I was working for, we would send the technician out to the home. And I started a B2B platform there and worked with some relocation companies. So an executive's moving across, they got high expensive AV equipment. We would dismount their equipment, movers pack it up, ships to the new house, and then we'd reinstall it. As that company, as much as I loved working there and really got my first taste of a small business, it's where I became addicted to the small business platform, is I realized that as it became unethical, I had two choices. One, go sell insurance like my dad and possibly golf probably a lot more and have a lot more freedom and residual income coming in, or start a business. And I decided to start a business, and I went to one of our biggest clients at the time as that business was falling apart and said, "Hey, if I started a company, would you follow me and be my first customer?" And he said, "Absolutely." We had a good trust working relationship. He knew that that company wasn't doing well. And he asked me two questions. I'm 26 years old at this time. And he said, "Do you have any money, Travis?" And I think I might have had about $5,000 to my name. And I said, "Well, no." He said, "Do you have a business plan?" in my head saying, what the hell is a business plan? I said, no. He said, well, hop on a plane and fly out to Philly. Let's talk. So I did that. And we put together a Snap install. And the focus was primarily three things. We call them our three pillars. Our people, which I'm most proud of, is our culture. Our partners, which is all of our customers. And then our technicians across the country. And with that focus of those three pillars, we've really over the last, it'll be 10 years here in September, we've seen the success. And as I was stating, the primary focus, the reason we started was the relocation. And that's what his business, his other business does, is they help relocate executives. And we do that AV work for them. So as we succeeded with that, we branched off over the last 10 years into the healthcare facilities, into digital signage world.
Yeah, I would imagine you would have looked at digital signage and thought, okay, the one and two gig things with executives is interesting, but if we want scale, we've got to find something that offers scale, and signage does that.
You nailed it. Yeah, the onesie twosies are great, but when you get the 1,000 site rollouts, that's really our bread and butter, and it's really where the company grew.
When companies describe themselves as service providers, I always kind of push back on them and say, okay, where do you start and where do you stop? Like, what's the range of services and what's the stuff you don't do?
I think that's a great question. And I think that question is just as important as what you do do. One thing we are not is we don't provide system consulting or design. We don't provide any hardware or software. And we also don't run a NOC system for system monitoring. Plenty of other companies do all that stuff, and we don't. And we're also the type of service provider that some others aren't out there. We know when to say no. We know when to say that, A, either our partner isn't going to set us up for success, or B, it's just not in our specialty. Think high-level integrations. We have boots on the ground across the country. We have high-level technicians, and we also just have warm bodies that sometimes just need to show up and swap out an HDMI or turn off a PC player to get it back up and running. And all those skill sets, we aren't the type of company that's going to say, yes, 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 we can do that. We make sure that we can define it and follow through on the scope of work and then get the deliverables back to our customer and represent them in a professional manner as well.
There are some of your competitors who seem to be focused on specific areas. I won't rattle them off because you don't need to know that. Or listeners don't need to know that, but maybe they're heavy on C stores, or maybe they're heavy on QSR. Do you have a vertical that you tend to focus on, or is it more just like, what do you need to do? And let's talk.
Yeah. So our goal is to provide solutions to our partners, and we're a vendor neutral company. We have partners ranging from that focus on healthcare, that focus on QSR, that focus on kiosk. And what we try to do is really embed ourselves with our partners and make sure that we understand what their goals are and that we can deliver on the scope of works. So when we say our focus, we're in all of those, but our focus isn't a specific vertical within digital signage. Our focus is our partners and making sure that we can deliver on their needs, and they range in so many different ways. If you asked me where majority of our work comes in the digital signage, I'd say it'd be through the healthcare and QSRs.
Healthcare would be interesting right now. I'm guessing you haven't done a lot in the last 10 months.
It's for some yes and for some no. It's changed. COVID has changed the way we've had to do business, and as many people listening can probably attest to. Mm-hmm. For one, on the healthcare side is the clinics. What we've seen a big increase in is them utilizing digital signage more to educate their customers, A, for social distancing maybe, B, for not having to, while they're sitting in the waiting room, whether it's limited usage in the waiting room or whatnot, they're utilizing a lot of that things. Then all the way back to the doctor's office, putting signs up in the office so while they're waiting for the doctor, it's there too. So for some customers, you're absolutely right. We've seen a huge decline. And then in others, business has actually boomed since Q2. So,
okay. So, yeah, you wouldn't be going into primary care facilities like a hospital or something like that, but tons of clinics are still seeing patients and they need to communicate with them.
Yeah. And now we have some of our customers, they're even working on medical carts that offer the vaccine that we're helping integrate and deploy at hospitals too. So,
Oh, how would that work?
So the card is designed in different ways to ensure that it holds the vaccine, and then it monitors without getting into too many details. It's providing care for the customers as they come through with minimal contact for the nurses or practitioners to the clients.
Now, you said that you don't have a NOC, you don't do recurring managed services and things like that. Is that a headcount choice, a complication choice, or is it that you don't want to compete with your partners?
More the latter. As being vendor neutral, it's also very important that we aren't competing with our customers as well. And we're about 98% labor. That 2% falls into on-site materials that we sometimes are forced to provide. But some of the reoccurring services that we have started dabbling into that have worked well for both our partners and ourselves is preventive maintenance type work, or we call them health checks. You go out and you do a 1,000 site rollout. Well, that equipment needs to continue to function and function properly. And us providing maintenance on that regularly, where we show up just to check it and provide the right deliverables back to our customers so they have that peace of mind as they charge their customers to ensure it's actually working, is good too. And a lot of companies are being audited on that type of stuff too lately. So we can help them be proactive on that and make sure we get ahead of the game instead of them having to pay maybe for a 90-minute response time when they call us and it's a fire truck having to roar out there as quick as possible to get a PC back up and running. So we've seen some value in that. And also with COVID, as you know, is a lot of systems are collecting dust over the last 9 months. And those systems are going to need to be powered back on and up and running here soon. And we've seen a majority of our partners already proactively planning to get us out there and get those up and running. So it really depends on the retail store or the location allowing us to come in and do that. But we've seen a big uptick in that as of late.
When you describe partners, would they most typically be like CMS software companies, or are they manufacturers as well?
A wide variety of all of them, yeah. Typically some resellers as well.
And so for a reseller or a kind of a local solutions provider, if they get a big gig, they just know that they couldn't possibly do a four-state rollout or a nationwide rollout.
Exactly. Or sometimes they might just want boots on the ground. It might be an integrator and they're trying to do a very large project in a state that they aren't located in, and they're going to fly out one specialist, but then they want eight of our techs to show up and run wires, mount screens, check connections, and they're kind of the guide on site why they direct our people around.
Now, digital signage is one of those things that goes from very simple stuff, like you could get a gig in a workplace where you're putting in meeting room displays or, you know, video conferencing displays, that kind of thing. But it can go all the way to the other end where you have a 300-foot LED video canopy. Do you cover the whole waterfront, or is there kind of a sweet spot for what you do?
It's a great question. And it kind of ties back to my point of us being willing and able to say no when we need to. if we can generate a scope of work that can be consistent from coast to coast, that's where we succeed. And that scope of work needs to be done from any tech across the country. And as you can imagine, when you're dealing with 700 plus technicians, their skill sets have a wide variety of range. So some of those high-end projects, we absolutely do those. Sometimes it's only in specific metro areas we work with our partners, but getting back to figuring out the partner's needs and the systems they're trying to put together and have assembled, that's where we come back working with them and hey, we can do this. Or unfortunately, we aren't the right partner for this, but if you can send your people out to do this portion, we're happy to do the mounting and other things along those lines to make sure that we're meeting each other's needs. But it does tie back to that saying no when you need to say no, because in our industry, it's funny. You think you'd be in a good spot as a business when your competitors don't do a good job. But unfortunately for us, it's completely opposite. there's been some companies, service providers throughout the years in this industry that have really put a bad name on the nationwide service provider. And that doesn't help us. That actually hurts us when mm-hmm. our partners, as we're trying to sell to them, they already lost that trust. As a small business, for me, every client we get, we have to work so hard to get. So it's so important to keep those. And from their perspective, when you hire a nationwide service provider and they work so hard to sell that deal and then their nationwide service provider screws it up, it's going to be a pretty hard sell for us to get that trust back from them and tell them that we're different than what they've already experienced.
Mm-hmm. How important is aftercare? Because, you know, in the olden times when I used to travel, I would go through airports and you know, mass transit terminals and all that sort of thing. And I would see video walls and they were badly in need of calibration and had been left way too long. But I get a sense that in a lot of cases, you have customers who, or somebody has the customers who put these things in and then they kind of forget about them, or they're there, but they don't worry about, you know, the colors drifting and all that sort of stuff.
It happens all the time. I've even been in airports where we've performed installations at, say a quick service restaurant. I've actually went back there and fixed some cable management because I walked by and I was like, God dang it, we've done that. But when you're at a retail store or anything, you have so many employees going around, things get touched. Mm-hmm. Cable management falls because someone was messing with something. The calibration's off because it's been 2 years. So you nailed it on the head. It's a service we provide and we feel the ROI is there, but some people don't budget for it. And when they don't budget for it, it's hard to justify adding that cost because it isn't always cheap either. But the value is there. And there's nothing mm-hmm. worse from my perspective when you walk into a restaurant and three screens are working, one's off, or the cable management hanging. And I know I'm going to be biased and nitpicky when I see something small where maybe the average consumer might not be. But that value is there from our end.
Yeah, I mean, in my local bank outside of Halifax, I go in there, there's almost always one of the screens out, and I've got to a point where I know the manager, and I'll walk in and go, oh, that one's out again. And we've actually gone behind the counter and monkeyed around to try to get things going again, even though he doesn't know who the service provider is. I know who it is, but I'm not going to call them or anything else. But you just, like you say, you get nitpicky and you want to see it working properly.
Yeah. Well, if you ever know it's Snap, you better call me, Dave, because we'll get out and fix it.
Well, you're probably not allowed in Canada right now.
That's true. We do have technicians in major metro areas, though.
Oh, there you go.
In Canada.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Are there tougher environments than other ones to do? Like, what are the hardest venues to do installs in?
Well, pre-COVID or post-COVID?
Let's talk both.
Yeah. Pre-COVID, I think airports always take the cake. It's just, you got to go through more security. You got always, well, again, pre-COVID, you got a lot of people walking around the airport all the time. Mm-hmm. Also, overnight work, after hours. So we're structured where in-house at our corporate office, we have full-time nighttime employees that are doing the project management because we have enough work where we do a lot of overnight work, but that's where it's tough. So we have different tiers of our technicians. We have primaries, tier one, tier two, tier three. And our primaries, they're our bread and butter guys. They're in across the country. They live and breathe Snap install. Well, when we have nighttime work and we need to utilize them for that, then during the daytime, which is still a high priority of work, we got to bring in the other crews and make sure that they're up to speed with handling that higher workload that was there for the primaries that are covering the nighttime or vice versa. So it's a challenge for us logistically in making sure no matter when the work comes across or where it is, that we're providing that high level of service that we promise to our customers. But as far as physical locations, I would always, I think, put airports at the top. But we do a lot of work in airports because, as you know, when you walk through airports, there's a lot of screens everywhere. So there's a lot of business to be had.
So I've written about this, that it's a bit of a blessing in disguise if there's anything good that comes out of COVID, and there's not very much at all, is that a lot of projects that would normally have to be done overnight and normally done if they're done through the day with a whole bunch of hoarding and a whole bunch of disruption, those venues are kind of mothballed right now. And it's, you know, you can go in and start and stop a project, just work in daytime for a week, and you're done without ever having to, be there at midnight.
It has been the one blessing that COVID has provided us, is less consumers walking around and more daytime work. But the other problem that comes with that is a lot of people just cut their budgets immediately and said, nope, no more technology, digital signage spending. And we've seen a lot of our partners take some hits there too. So as great as it is, we would take pre-COVID any day over post-COVID in regards to the amount of projects that were being awarded. Mm-hmm. But a challenge for COVID too is with us is we really, I had to take my network team and actually add two people to it. And our network team is really the team that drives the compliance and relationships with our contractors. And it became a full-time job for two employees just to manage the different state regulations, county regulations for our techs, because we felt the need, communication needed to be at an all-time high for our network. But also we felt the need to educate them and make sure they were aware, really from Q2 all the way to now, is we were trying to stay ahead of the game and letting the technicians know that safety is number one, and what their state was regulating and what they could and couldn't do. And make sure in some cases we were considered a needed service. Where if a cop pulled some of our techs over, which was happening, we had a sheet that could provide them that they were essential workers, and that was needed. And we were providing that documentation because we were essential workers. We were in healthcare. We were doing the type of work that the states checked off and said, you're good to go. So that became a full-time job, and that became a challenge. And we were seeing us spending resources and money on things we never had to in the past. And it was good. And as much as COVID has hurt many across the country and many businesses, I look at it as a blessing in disguise. In one way, if you look back a year from now, Q1 of 2020, Snap was firing on all cylinders. We were chasing our tail in many ways. And then COVID hit, and it really about slowed our business down 70% for a little bit, but it allowed me to take a step back and work with my leadership team and take one step back to take two steps forward. And we didn't let anyone go due to COVID. But now we've since then, we've brought on 14 new hires, and our complete company is restructured in a way that we're built for growth. And I strongly believe if that never happened, I wouldn't be in the spot where I'm at, as growing through some of those challenges. And then also our company, I think we'd still be chasing our tail in a lot of ways instead of being prepared for what's ahead now, which we feel 2021 and digital signage, it's going to come back, and it's going to come back roaring, and we're excited mm-hmm. for it.
Your business is one that relies heavily on human factors. You've got your 60 or so full-time employees, but I think you said 700 contractors or something like that. That's a lot of personalities scattered across the country, and you have to stay on top of them all. You have to rely on them showing up. And then you've got, by extension, and I remember this from my own time being VP ops of a company and running another company, that you could have the install techs there, but you're still on the phone yelling at an electrician who was supposed to be there at 11 and it's 12:30. And so I was like, how do you get past all that? Have you kind of learned a way to do it?
Lots of gray hairs and probably die at a young age. No, you're, It is. It's our whole business is built off relationships, and we don't have a product that flies off the walls that we can box up and ship out to our customers. Our product is technicians. It's humans, mm-hmm. and humans make mistakes. I make mistakes every day, and that's okay. One thing with our customers, it's a sales pitch. We don't lie to our prospects. We tell them, hey, there's going to be days that you don't like us because we're going to mess up. And that's okay, because what we can promise to you is every time we mess up, we're going to do the right thing and we're going to figure out a solution to have you have a happy customer. But I'd be lying if I said there weren't days I wanted to pull my hair out. It's one of the most frustrating parts about this business model is our 50 plus employees in house. We could work our asses off, check every box, make sure everything's perfect. And that technician who we've maybe never physically met that we're sending out to a site fails us. And sometimes that's on us because we don't do our checks and balances, but sometimes it might just be because he or she's having a bad day. So mm-hmm. things we do to prevent that is last 5 years, we've completely invested into our network team that builds the relationships, holds our tech compliant, insurance, all the county, whatever it may be. And then also we have reviews with them and they know how they're graded. So our technology, another investment we've made, every tech out in the field has an app on their phone. It's the Snap app, and there, that's where they do all their work. It's where they accept their jobs. It's where we can see when they're completed with the job, all the deliverables come through. But then they also know their rating on a job. And some businesses out there, some prospects or even clients to this day, they ask us, hey, your competitors say they have W-2 technicians across the country. You guys have subs. Why are they better? Why are you better than them? And I don't know if it's about who's better or not, but I'm a strong believer that the contractor model, if used appropriately and is accountability is there, is stronger than the W-2 model in some ways. Mm. And I tie that all back to competition. With a W-2 employee, they might get complacent. They might not care as much. They might call in sick or do something else, where with subcontractors, you actually have that competition level. And if you're mm-hmm. transparent with them and show them that other people in their areas are knocking on the door looking for that work, it doesn't mean that we make them compete with each other and hold it to their throat every day. We're all about building relationships long-term. We don't just throw it out to a marketplace and cross our fingers. Our techs work directly with us and we build those loyal relationships. But that competition aspect is, hey, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. But at the same time, I need you to keep up that accountability because I hold myself accountable and I expect you to hold yourself accountable as we're paying you for this work.
There are some, I'm aware of at least two matchmaker services out there that kind of like dating services for AV techs. You put in a need and different techs in that region can respond to it and bid on the deal. Are they competition or is that really kind of a onesie-twosie thing that you don't tend to play in very often?
Onesie-twosie thing that we don't play in at all. Our value add, some of our technicians, they work for our competitors as well. And we're okay with that. We're transparent in saying that's fine as long as when you're doing our work, you're putting our work first. And actually, it's a two-way street. A lot of them come back and say, gosh, we wish you had this work because you treat us way better, because you pay us quicker, because you do this, this, and this. And with the onesie-twosie companies like that, is our value add is really the project management feature we offer in-house with those 50-plus employees. If you call Snap as a client of ours, you're calling the same person and they know exactly what job that you're talking about. They can connect you with the right person. They can provide the tier one or tier two support service they need to. And that pays dividends for our customers because there's nothing worse than getting a call from your customer saying, hey, the TV just fell, or hey, this didn't happen. Instead of a call from us being proactive and saying, hey, this happened. If you want to reach out to your customer, that's fine. But here's what we're doing about it to make it right. And here's how we're going to make sure your customer has a smile on their face at the end.
Are the jobs getting more complicated because you now have a lot of DirectView LED and a whole range of new products that in many cases, the cabinets have different shapes, the mounting systems are different. There's very little in the way of universal standards or anything else. So you go into a job and the techs have to kind of crack the manual and everything else and look at the back and go, okay, this is yet a new wrinkle that we haven't seen before.
They're definitely getting more complicated. And real men read manuals is what we tell our technicians. there's lots of techs out there that will say, I got this. I don't need to look at a manual, as anyone that's an expert in their field. But it's came clear as the complications get thrown our way is we have to make sure the documentation is there. We have to make sure the expectations are the same from what we think our customers expect to what they actually expect of us and lay that out. And in our technology, having checkpoints. So as a technician goes through the job, that person has to actually check off the things they're doing to ensure that we're following it step by step. Because if you do the wild, wild west, so you just say, hey, hang it up on there and let's just hope it's right. That's not going to work. There's steps you have to follow. And we work with our partners to make sure that's laid out and very clear so that it can be followed with the scope of work.
Last question. Is there a piece of advice that you provide to your partners and if you're exposed directly to your end user customers that you try to get across to them to kind of smooth out the job?
Yes. Some of them let us be involved more than others, but for us, it's communication and get us involved as quickly as possible. Not to give advice and tell you what's right or wrong, but we've seen a lot of things. We've been in business for almost 10 years now. It's not our first rodeo. We do this all day, every day. And what some customers might not realize is checking those boxes and having the checks and balances prior to deployment is so important. And in the end, it saves them a lot of money. And we don't do it to rattle our cage and cause more issues. We do it to make sure we're being proactive before that deployment starts so they can save money in the end and we can avoid less trips.
And do you have to try to convince them of the value of a preliminary site survey?
I think it depends on the stage of the relationship we're at with our customers. For those, the ones that we've been working with for a long time, they see the value. Maybe they didn't at first, and then we had to sell it to them and show them why. Now they know it's there. But it is something that can be challenging at times where that customer doesn't want to pay that small fee for the survey up front. And we allow them not to, but in the end, they pay triple what it would have cost because they avoided a couple of things that they could have covered.
Yeah, they think it's a cash grab until they find out, actually, no, we should have done that.
Exactly. And it's definitely not a cash grab for us. It's more of a break even to cover our asses on some other things going forward.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Travis, I appreciate you taking some time with me.
Hey, I appreciate it, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.